Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.org.au. I'm Rebecca, and today I'm joined by Kirsty in the studio. Today, it's International Day of People with a Disability, and in honour of that, we're bringing you this special episode of Brainwaves. We've asked you to send in your stories about the NDIS, and today we'll be reading them out loud and having a discussion. To those who've reached out to us and told us your story and hardships, we want to say thank you, and our support is with you. So first off, Kirsty, do you want to read out our first story?
Yeah, sure thing. So the first one that we've had sent in goes like this. From the age of 13, I'm now 40. I have suffered with complex trauma, bipolar affective disorder, anxiety and depression. I was after support in order to support my recovery. I have previously had support from a different state similar to FAMS, which otherwise known as personal helpers and mentors, which helped me immensely. With support, I gathered evidence of my disability. I filled out the access request, the supporting evidence form, and even had a letter stating my disability provided by a local hospital, which was signed off by a community clinician and consultant psychiatrist. The process of gathering all this information was stressful and upsetting, and it took several months. I didn't hear back from the NDIS for roughly 6 months, and I was told I didn't meet the criteria for NDIS support. I was linked in with advocacy to support another application, but I gave up on the process after being told it could take another year.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that I've heard so often about the NDIS lately is that people are waiting months and even years.
Yeah, like it's an indeterminate amount of time.
Yeah, and it's like if you need that support now, like what happens? And it's... Like, it's just so sad being told that after spending, like, so much, like, effort, stress, emotional pain, like, going through this whole process, only to be like, no, you're not eligible for it. It's a bit silly, I think.
And just this whole process goes in, like, it's stressful for anyone, yet alone if you have a complex mental disorder and with barely any support along the way, it can be so easy to just give up.
Yeah.
It seems like more effort than it's worth.
It's, like, it's hard for anyone. Like, I know personally from, because I spoke to my mum last night, myself, she said, like, I asked her about the NDIS, because if she, like, I know she filled in paperwork and forms and that, and she said that she filled in everything, she did everything this organisation wanted from her, and it's been over 8 months now and she still hasn't heard anything back and she's just like given up, because what's the point if you're just waiting to hear back from something that you're only going to get denied for? Like, it doesn't make any sense at all.
It's very disheartening as well.
And so the next story is, I have supported and still am in the process of supporting a family to access the NDIS for their 15-year-old daughter who was diagnosed with level 2 autism. She has been disengaged and isolated from schooling for several years. In their initial application, the access request, supporting evidence, WISC assessment, Vinelands Adaptive Behaviour Assessment, the CAMHS assessment, and evidence of disability and functional impact letters from her paediatrician were provided, and it clearly stated functional impact, permanency, and scope of disability. The first application was denied due to lack of evidence, when in fact there was not much else clinically that could have been provided. They met access on their second round of applying, but this has been a 2-year journey for the family. What if...
It seems like that's the common theme. Like, number one, the fact that it takes so long to get everything underway, like, years, and also this lack of evidence thing. Despite having letters from hospitals, doctors, all this, like, valid evidence, it's just not seen as valid.
No, and it's definitely not good on the family, especially if they've got, like, a 15-year-old daughter who's, like, not engaged in school, like, completely isolated. Like, you think that would be a priority for them, and they just bump it up the list. But, like, I think... That's the whole problem with the NDIS is there's not enough people working on, like, applications. And if there is, half the people that apply get denied first round of being, like, applications. So they have to apply again and again. And, like, anything, like, rejection from anything is hard. But getting rejected from services that you've previously had and it's supposed to be... like, the more adaptive and better system for disability when it's really showing otherwise that it's not.
Yeah. It's failing the people that it should be supporting, it seems.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so the next story that we had sent in was, I am a young guy who lived at Wellways Youth Residential Service. I was diagnosed with a cognitive impairment, anxiety and depression. The application process was completed and it took almost a year to find out I didn't meet the criteria. So again...
It's like you wait for so long hoping that it's a yes and then it comes back as a no. It's like, to me, it doesn't make any sense. Like, the NDIA says that people with a disability have the right as other Australians to determine their best interests and have a choice to in control over their lives. And it recognises that everyone's needs and goals are different. But how is it recognising anything?
Yeah.
Because people are getting rejected, people with serious disabilities, and it, like, doesn't even make sense. Like, I know an article we read, maybe it was a couple of months ago, this lady has been diagnosed with bipolar and she basically got rejected because apparently her illness is not permanent. And, like, it just astounds me, honestly. How can we be moving forward with what they claim to be such a wonderful and more acceptable program if they can't even get half the people that are applying on the system? Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah, one recent article that I read from The Guardian is titled "The NDIS Failing People with Severe Mental Health Issues." It talks about that as well, how the scheme's need for participants to prove permanence of disability is alienating those with mental health problems who are treated on the basis that they can and will recover. So, yeah.
It just kind of, like, astounds me that this is even happening. Like, from just the stories, like, we're reading, like, you can obviously tell there's so many people who are struggling with, like, complex mental illnesses and other disabilities, but they're being denied the support that everyone should need. And on top of that, the support services that are now in place, they're getting cut, so all the money and funding can go to the NDIS. Like, to me, that doesn't make any sense. So the next story we have is, I am a middle-aged woman with a long history of mental health challenges and substance use. I have a diagnosis of BPD, somatic pain disorder, depression, along with chronic lower back pain. I submitted reports from my pain specialist and a support letter from a community clinician. I included the access request form, the supporting evidence form filled by a psychiatrist, the modified Rankin scale assessment, and the OSTRI low back pain disability questionnaire, which stated level of functional impact and permanency of my condition. I didn't mean access and has taken roughly 1 year to gather the information. I ended up disengaging from the service as I recently became homeless due to not paying rent. Now that, like, that just breaks my heart, honestly.
And the fact that she had so many, like, so many bits of evidence.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Like, what more do they want? Mm. Do they want, like, a letter from the Queen or something? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, because if you've got, like, a clinician, if you've got, like, a psychiatrist, if you've got all these pieces of paper which are clearly stating that your condition is permanent and it's serious, like, why wouldn't you believe that? It's like going in to see a psychiatrist and saying, look, I have all these symptoms. I think I might have depression. Mm. And they're like, oh, no, you don't. You just have a cold.
Yeah.
It's completely invalidating the people who have been diagnosed with these illnesses and who have this disability. And it's so upsetting as well. I know you're a disability support worker.
Mm.
How does this kind of, like, all make you feel? Because you work with people who have a disability, so you know firsthand, like, what it actually entails to care for people.
So I have a range of clients with, like, and they have a range of various intellectual disabilities, like autism and, among other things. And I know that a few of them used to attend, like, day services, which have now closed due to this whole NDIS thing. And they're suffering because they don't get access to the kind of facilities that they used to participate in for years. And all of a sudden they're just put into different, like, housing, and, like, they now have one-on-one support, which is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And, like, the work that I'm doing with them is good, but it might not necessarily be suitable for all of them. But they don't really have a choice about it.
Yeah, it's either that or nothing.
Yeah.
And that's really sad.
It is sad.
It's like, what happens when one day they're not eligible for any support? Do you just, like, you just leave them to, like, that's what I just don't understand about this whole NDIS thing is, I think it was estimated there's supposed to be around 61,000 Australians that are going without support.
Mm.
And I mean, what are you going to do with that? Like, what's going to happen to them if their condition worsens? And even then, still, the NDIS doesn't recognise that they've got a serious condition.
Mm. Well, yeah, I've got some info here from that same article that I cited before. It says the scheme at full rollout is designed to cover about 64,000 people with psychosocial disability. That is well below the total number of people who require ongoing support for severe mental illness in Australia, which the government estimates at 230,000. The report casts doubt on the government's figure, saying its basis is unclear, given there are an estimated 690,000 Australians with a severe mental illness. So the fact that it's only designed to support 64,000...
Mm. It's not enough.
It's not enough.
And it's, like, the fact is no one is born wanting to be born with a disability. Mm. No one is born wanting to have, like, a mental illness. Like, we don't come into this world wanting that or wishing it upon someone. And the fact that there are supports in place now, but they're being cut to go to the NDIS is absolutely stupid, because what's going to happen to all those people who don't meet the criteria, even if they have serious disabilities?
Mm.
Like, what's going to happen to them? Are they just going to get tossed aside?
Well, what we're seeing happening is an increase in people, like, attending emergency service providers because they don't have that support. So when they're used to a particular, like, kind of support and it just gets pulled out from under them, like, they're more likely to become homeless or, like, make attempts on their life. Yeah, not being able to
pay rent at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so sad. Do you want to read the last story we've got out?
Yeah, so the last one is, I'm a middle-aged woman who has recently got access, but the process was incredibly traumatic for me. I live with complex mental health conditions, such as eating disorders, substance abuse, DID, agoraphobia, anxiety and depression, which I've had since a young age. So she's actually one that's, like, surprise, surprise, attained access. Yeah. But again, she says that it was traumatic, the whole process of getting there.
Yeah, because it takes, like, just from what we've read, like, it can take a year, it can, like, and when you need that support now,
yeah,
like, you just have to hope and wait for the best. And if that doesn't happen, just like other people that have written in, like, you've just got to keep trying. But then it's that whole process of how many times can you be rejected before you're like, I've had enough.
Yeah. And these people that are waiting for a response, I wonder if they're given updates or if they're kind of just left.
I don't think so, because I know from my mum's perspective, she went and filled paperwork like 8 months ago and she hasn't heard a peep back.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, like, I understand there's so many people applying for the NDIS, but at least have like someone checking in every couple of months to give people an update, not to let them just sit there and wonder like what's going to happen next.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, it's not like it's bad that people are waiting so long, but it wouldn't be as bad if they were checked in on and if they were updated, like, yeah, you're this number in the queue, like, it's, we remember you, it's still happening, like, the application's in process.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's none of that, it seems.
Yeah, because with other, like, with other support services, like Centrelink, for instance, like, you can always ring up and get an update. Yeah. But if the NDIS is just basically blanking people out, like, it just,
yeah,
like, how are you even supposed to get any information? So I guess, like, so I know the services that the NDIS really cover, which I think it's good that people will be able to pick and choose what will, like, what suits them, instead of actually having to go off a state basis where, no, you're not eligible this because you're not living in the state. But the one thing that I just can't get over is just what the NDIA says about the NDIS. And it says that the NDIS replaces a disability system that was unfair and inefficient with a new national system that is world-leading, equitable and sustainable. Do you agree with that? Like, why are so many people being left out if this is supposed to be such a new system that's amazing? And it's, and, like, I mean, you can't really say, oh, because it's new, like, it'll take a while for it to improve in that, because before, like, even putting the NDIS on the table, you should have had, they should have had everything organized. Like, I don't get it. I just don't
know what they expected to happen. Like, yeah.
It's like, what, like, what's the point? Like, I mean, it's taking away money from services that are so much needed for the community and putting it all into the NDIS, where half the people who, like, are suffering and used the services before can no longer use it. It, like, to me, it doesn't make sense. I'm sure there's, like, a lot of people at home that feel exactly the same way.
Yeah.
'Cause it's, like, if it's supposed to help people, why isn't it helping people who have these serious conditions? Like, why do people constantly have to apply again and again? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just, it just astounds me, and it makes me feel sorry for everyone who is involved in the system, because they're the ones suffering. It's not like our politicians, it's not the prime minister, it's like, it's the people who make up the community that are suffering.
Definitely.
And, like, I don't know, it breaks my heart, and I think it's definitely, like, seeing these stories on paper and actually reading them out, I think it makes it all real. And I think that's one of the things I love about doing this, is that we're able to talk to people and to bring their stories to light. And I think as much as it sucks right now, we just all need to, like, keep fighting and just raising our voices and telling the, like, the real stories.
Yeah.
Because these stories we've got here, they're real people.
Exactly.
Who are struggling.
Yeah. And, yeah, these people often don't have a voice. Well, they obviously have a voice, but their voice isn't voiced in...
Yeah, and it's not being heard by politicians, by everyone making the new laws about, like, mental health and that. Like, like, how... And that what really astounds me about, like, mental health in particular is how can you make all these policies and all these laws if you don't actually talk to the ones who are struggling with mental illness and struggling with disability? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And I think, like, this day, like, International Day of People with Disability, like, it's so important to have a day like this where we bring to light stories that are often just shunned in the dark. So, yeah. What, if you had any, like, if you could improve anything, like, what would you say just from, like, your past experience of being, like, a disability support worker?
Well, like you said, the politicians that are making all these changes, they need to actually talk to people who they're implementing the changes supposedly for to figure out what their needs are. And what they would realise is that the needs are complex and that they have to actually attend to them, not just make, like, a broad, sweeping rule for everyone.
Yeah. It just breaks... It honestly breaks my heart, like, just reading these stories. And I think it's important that we thank you at home who are listening. And if you've sent in your story to us, like, I think, like... It's so important. I mean, that's why we do this job. We want to help as much as we possibly can. And we're sending our best wishes to you and your family. And we hope that you get the help and proper treatment that you need, because it's not fair.
And that you deserve as well.
Yeah. As even I know when I was younger, I went to a support service, and every single, like, week or so they'd come to my house, they'd pick me up and they'd actually take me out, and it would just be, like, it was honestly, like, the best part of my week. And that got cut because of funding.
Yeah.
So, and that was, like, years, like, 7 years ago nearly. But, like, now the mental health system's a little bit better, disability support is a lot better than it was back then, but it's still, like, support services are being cancelled. Like, it's just, it's not good, and the government needs to do something or implement a place where you can get actual updates on what's going on, because it's not fair for people to be left in the dark.
Yeah, I think that one is an easy thing that can be implemented. Like, that doesn't really require much funding or use of their resources, just to, like, have that little thing in place.
Yeah, and if it's the one thing they can do right now, why don't they just do it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, it's, like, I'm pretty much speechless. Like, these stories, like, I think it's so powerful because they're not just words on the paper. They're actual people who are experiencing this, experiencing such complex health conditions. And, I mean, it's not fair. I mean, if we can provide, like, our politicians and our government officials a good income, why can't we provide people who are struggling with disability or mental health issues the right support services? Like, why are we wasting so much money on our politicians when there's literally no money for people who actually need it?
Yeah, the priorities aren't right there.
Definitely not. And I think that really needs to change. But yeah, once again, we'd like to thank everyone who sent in their story. We hope you enjoyed this special episode of Brainwaves for International Day of People with Disability. Thank you so much for everything you guys have really done for us. We are definitely really privileged to have such a voice, and the best part about this job is we can give your stories and your opinions a voice. So I think that's so important. So you can find more of our shows at our website, brainwaves.org.au, or on the 3CR website, 3cr.org.au, or on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Wednesday at 5 p.m. for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.